You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9am to 12 midday.
You're very welcome back to the show. 086 1800 964 is the text number on the programme. 1850 400 964 is the telephone number as well. Looking back at some of the news stories of the week, on the Friday panel this week and this morning, I have Bernadette Kenny, CEO of the Blue Box Charity, Doreen Graham, CEO of the Clare Local Development Company, and we'll be joined in a small while by Gerard Howard from Crimmins Howard Solicitors in Shannon. First of all, let's have a quick listen back to some of the stories from the past week.
Let us approach the next 7 years with energy and enthusiasm, bringing our long yield to our work of building together what may come to be seen as a real and beautiful republic of inclusivity, creativity, imagination, love, and indeed joy.
My car got completely engulfed in flames, and my husband, I called him and I said, I think I'm going to die. I love you. Tell the kids I love them. And he told me, don't die. Run. Get out of the car and run.
I have to say, I weighed up yesterday and we discussed it, whether we would, you know, show a thong in the doll, because we don't want to be seen to be trivialising something that's very serious. But we felt it was important to show the incongruous nature of such, you know, garments being shown in the doll. But every day or every week around the world, they are shown in a courtroom on a Tuesday morning.
If you ask my question, am I going to vote against it? The answer is yes. For the first time since partition, Dublin, under these proposals, would have more say in some aspects of the government of Northern Ireland than London. So I don't see how you can support it from a democratic point of view. I don't see how a unionist can support it. And I don't see how you can support it if you believe in the political economic freedom of this country.
Certainly some colleagues are that determined, they do want to remove her, but the vast majority of the party respectfully disagrees with that position, and she's got a lot of loyalists both in the party but also the country.
Pesto has been stockpiled because of the Brexit.
Yeah.
So my mum has sent me downtown to buy pesto. Like she could probably, no, she doesn't like the granules, you see?
Yeah, very interesting that one. I saw two bright lights at 11 o'clock seem to back over to the right and then climb away at speed, at least.
Okay, just so you know, the other aircraft in the air have also reported the same thing, so we're going to have a look.
Nano.
That was compiled by Fiona McGarry, by the way. Just some of the stories from during the week all over the world, in fairness, and we're going to talk about some of them now. As I mentioned, I'm joined in the studio by Bernadette Kenny and by Doreen Graham and Gerard Howard with us shortly. Bernadette and Doreen, like myself, do you hope that this Brexit thing is all just maybe a bad dream, Bernadette?
Actually, I do, Pat. I wake up and think, oh my goodness, especially when you hear, I mean, there, you know, the bipartisan stuff that's going on and the tearing of the fabric of something that we've all worked, well, both community and politically worked really hard over the years to bring, you know, the North and the South closer. And that goes back to, you know, what goes on in schools and community groups. There's been lots of funding from the EU about that. I mean, it's good to see that the EU is supporting Ireland and the north of Ireland in terms of trying to keep us holistic in our, both in our trade but also in our minds, because I think that's what can start to be resurrected again, is that segregation, which is really dangerous, and people north and south don't want that anymore. So it does worry me that that's getting stirred up on the right.
Doreen, are you hoping it's all a bad dream? Are you annoyed by it, or are you interested in it?
Very interested, because I think it's hard not to be, because of all the countries in Europe outside of Britain, we're the ones who would be most affected by it. And here in Clare, you know, farming is a very important part of our economy, and agriculture is certainly, you know, going to suffer hugely if there isn't if things aren't resolved. Yeah, I mean, it's a nightmare, which for most of all, I think, for probably the people of Britain at this stage, because now the reality of what Brexit means is finally becoming clear. And I think as a result of that, there are a number of people, a lot of people who voted to leave, who I think now would change their mind if they had, and we'll suppose come to that as to what might happen next. But I think there's certainly a huge risk for everybody in Britain, and it's at every level. It's not just their jobs, it's not just food on the shelves and medicines. It is across education, health, trade, agriculture, fishing, every imaginable corner of people's lives. And I'm probably people didn't realise that the EU was so embedded in their lives. And I mean, the EU has got a lot of bad stick in Britain, and they've never been comfortable, fully comfortable with the EU in a way that I suppose in Ireland we have been much more so. But I think probably now, very late in the day, they're realising that what they've had with the EU is a lot better than they might have trying to paddle their own canoe. And that day of paddling your own canoe is long over. The world has changed, and a lot of the Brexiteers need to realise that, or to tell people that that is the truth now.
Sorry, Pat.
I was actually going to ask you on that, Bernadette. Do you believe that people in Ireland fully grasp or appreciate what a major decision as Brexit in another country, I know it's only across the Irish Sea and all that, can have such an impact on us?
I think they do, because as Doreen said, I live out in a farming community, and farmers are really worried about that. Local businesses are worried about it. It is such a complex trade that we've built between the north and the south, and then crossing the Irish Sea, that I think that, you know, one of the things that I was going to bring in there is that it is particularly a very right-wing push from Parliament, and it is particularly billionaires, because they're the ones that want to do trade with China and Russia and some of the other larger countries that are players that are now coming into it. And I think the British people were fooled on that. I think the whole race card was played, the whole thing of immigration was played. It frightened people. You know, Nigel Farage was absolutely appalling, and the other fellow with the blonde hair that Boris looks like Donald Trump. It's like his brother overseas.
Yes.
And I think Doreen's right. I hear too, both from family, Irish family and English family in England, that they don't want it, and they're not sure who does want it. And as the impact starts to come down, I think people are saying, you know, it should be put back to the people. This deal should be put back to the people if they're truly following democracy. But they're only following democracy because it suits the lads with the money. And that's how I see it.
Yes. We were talking during the newspaper review this morning, and I think it was Martin Conway, the senator, said the same thing as well, that Theresa May is standing her ground, obviously, but she seemed to be coming stronger. Just watching her over the past number of months or 12 months, she seemed very weak, she seemed very scattered, but in the past 3, 4, 5 days or the past week, she has become very strong, very powerful, very determined. And you'd have to credit her and maybe admire her in some respect because of that.
I think so. I think, you know, she's only human, after all. And I think she took this on and had to bring it forward. And she's been hammered by her own Tory party. And I think that she's tried to be fair. I think her and the Taoiseach and the government, and as Tim Dooley was saying earlier this morning, you know, there's been a lot of diplomats doing a lot of negotiation. She hasn't forgotten Ireland. And I think that was one of the things that some of us were quite afraid of, that we would again get pushed to the back. And fair play to the other 27 countries that are also pushing for Ireland. But I think Theresa May, you're right, Pat, she has strengthened in herself, and she needs to, because she's up against a really hardcore group of people, and also being threatened by the DUP every time she puts something forward.
Yes. They seem to be holding the cards. Doreen, your impression, what do you think of Theresa May and how she's been performing?
Well, I suppose when you're right in the corner, which is where she is now, I mean, up until now, she's been trying ducking and weaving and trying to get things across the line. And she's, you know, very juiced to her. She has managed to keep things on track to some extent. But when you're right in a corner and you have nowhere else to go, the only thing you can do is just stand your ground and hope that you can push back, which is what she's trying to do now. And obviously she has made her stand, and she has to hold that position now. There is nowhere else to go. But she's also up against the Remainers. And this is the irony or the complexity of it now, is that it's not just the Brexiteers who are critical of this deal. It's the Remainers who know that it is a bad deal. Well, any deal was going to be a bad deal for Britain compared to staying in the EU. But they, what they're looking at now is the choice between this deal and no Brexit at all, because that's where they want the referendum. The Remainers obviously want to go back to a second referendum. So that's what the choice they're looking at is, this deal or another referendum. And so, you know, she's not just fighting the Brexiteers. Yes.
Do you think that enough has been done here in this country, in Ireland, to ensure that businesses and, you know, with yourself working with the local development company, businesses you deal with, have they been informed well enough to know that they will have to make changes or prepare for the best case scenario and the worst case scenario as far as Brexit is concerned? Is enough being done to inform businesses, I wonder, and people generally?
I think the businesses that are, you know, mainly export businesses, I think the Enterprise Ireland and the government and state agencies have been doing their best to prepare them. But very hard to prepare for something that you don't actually know what's going to happen. Yes. And so, yes, you can prepare for the worst case scenario. But even in that context, and there is some preparations going on in recruiting extra customs and excise officials and that. But for businesses, you can't just change your practice. Because if, for example, you're exporting through Britain as your land bridge to the EU, look, what are the alternatives? You have to hope then that there will be additional ferry services from Ireland over to France, because if you want to avoid the land bridge and the queues at Calais and Dover. But the businesses can't do anything about that. That's up to the transport infrastructure and the government and others. So there's only so much that's within the control of businesses. Yes, they can look for other markets, but that doesn't happen overnight. And food and tastes and culture dictate a lot of where the markets are for what we produce. So again, you know, and then the costs. So there's so little of, for example, beef going into the farmer's pocket. I mean, it's marginal. In fact, it's loss-making as it is for most farmers. So if there has to be a further cut taken to pay for the transportation of beef to other markets, as opposed to the UK, where it is a premium market, you know, then that's going to finish off a lot of farmers.
A lot of farmers, indeed.
You know, so there isn't that room for, even financially, for manoeuvre, and a lot of these decisions are outside of farmers' and businesses' control.
Do you find, either of you, have you met people who have been just ordinary Joe Soaps on the road, or business people who have been concerned? Come in, Garo, take your time, there's no panic. Good to see you, you're very welcome. We'll get to you in a moment, catch your breath there, Garo. Are people, you know, expressing concern? Have you met people who have said, I'm worried about this, what's going on? Are people, same question again, of course, are they informed enough to know?
Well, I agree with Doreen. How can you inform on something that's really transient and not fixed? And I think probably in the background, a lot of us were hoping that they wouldn't Brexit because of the complex situation. But yes, I think people, both farmers and local businesses, and in education, that, you know, the whole, they're aware that, I mean, it was funny to listen to the woman going on about Bisto. But, you know, from that level up as Doreen said, around the price of beef and cattle and the movement of livestock and not just meat products, I think they will be affected. And Ireland has done so well in the last few years with local foods and with products, and the Irish beef is really looked for across the world, that land bridge is going to cause us an awful lot of issues. And farming is one of our major exports, just as we're growing it. So I think, people are feeling quite dismal, but they don't know, just like we don't know even in this moment, if that deal is going to be accepted. So the not knowing is worse than the knowing.
Yes, the uncertainty. Garrod Hard of Crimmins Hard, solicitors, and Shannon, our third panellist. Garrod, thanks for coming in. Great to see you. Are you a Brexit fan? Are you interested in Brexit? Have you been keeping an eye on it? Or are you just as annoyed as everybody else about it?
I think it's hard to avoid it. Yes. It's on every news outlet. It's in every paper. You're reading about it all the time. you know, Theresa May has a very difficult job. She was put in there to do this job, and in fairness to her, she's the steel for it. It's extraordinary that this started out as far as I can see, a battle for leadership of the Tory party when Cameron and Johnson decided they're going to back different sides, and this is where we wound up at Brexit. But when people voted for Brexit, what did they vote for? How do you unscramble an egg? Yeah. And yet this is the problem now. They're all trying to parse and cut it and see what suits them. And of course, they're looking back to their constituents. This is very cynical at the end of the day, as far as I can see. That's my own understanding of it. They're all trying to understand where their power base is in terms of whether they'll get elected again and what appeals to their base, whatever constituency they're from. Northern Ireland voted to remain. And it's curious now, isn't it,
that they're propping up...
They are propping them up, yes. DUP, Arlene Foster's, this is not what they want. But Northern Ireland wants to remain. And in the current... format, in the brief details we have, because it's just the detail is too much to be presented at this point, Northern Ireland looks like they will be remaining. So we have people jumping off the ship left, right and centre saying this isn't what they want, but they're all taking their own mandate because the British people themselves just voted to leave. But I don't think they understood the choice. I'm not being condescending in this. I don't think anybody understood the choice.
We made that point. It was because we mentioned the two big names, Nigel Farage and Boris Johnson, who, like somebody on a Saturday night and, outside the Queen's, throws a bottle into the crowd, runs and sees the row from the distance. And the misinformation that was put out there by Nigel Farage, and of course we saw what he did afterwards, he ran away from it laughing at it. And Boris Johnson, who must be rubbing his hands in the corner, saw this company coming, resigned, and is in line for Theresa May's job. I don't know, will it go that far? But misinformation was the big thing, wasn't it?
But we're talking about a political party in a country in the EU, and look at the fallout and the damage from this. Obviously, this is something new, and it's occurring in a vacuum. It's the first time it's been done. And... you know, it's a typical hurler on the ditch most of the time, where anything that's been proposed has been shot down. But where's the concrete proposals then that suits? And they all have their own mandate. They're all trying to pretend that they have this special understanding of what the British people want. This was on a knife edge. It was 52-48%. That was 70% of the people turned out to vote, or the electorate turned out to vote on this. So it was a huge turnout. But if the vote was held today, would they vote to stay?
Well, the Russians did interfere. And there was interference, and there has been quietly some looking at that in the background. And Britain have spent money looking at that. So there was interference. And Farage is now in trouble with the House in America, that government are now going to, especially now the Democrats have got a majority, he's going to be looked into. Because if you, I don't know, I follow a lot of American politics, obviously, as my wife's American, but and I've lived there, and Farage is now in deep trouble. And Farage was one of the main instigators, and he has run. And I think people were misguided, and it's easy for any of us to be misguided. I don't know the full facts about all of what's been negotiated and how hard it is behind the scenes. I only go what I'm fed by the media, and then that's which media do I choose to read.
Yes.
So I think that, put to the vote again, I think most people, from what I can gather, now I think it would be 52-47 to stay.
I thought it was astonishing, and obviously there was widespread astonishment, that the Brexit Secretary, Dominic Raab, said that he only recently realised how important Calais and Dover was. I mean, the incompetence to have somebody in that pivotal position, and who apparently at EU level was believed not to have a great understanding of the single market or the customs union. So you have somebody going over to negotiate in such an important role, who actually doesn't understand how it all works, and so much of that competence and understanding is at EU level, which is why they have been able to manage the negotiations from their side so strongly, because they know how it all works. They constructed it, and but there's been deliberate misunderstanding and deliberate untruths told. But there's also been complete, you know, it seems to be at a political level in Britain, and there are certainly people in Britain at official level that understand how the EU has worked, but at a political level, for a Brexit secretary to say that he didn't realise how important Kelly and Dover were is absolutely disgraceful.
Before we leave it, just as a matter of interest, the 20th no confidence letter has gone in. Ben Bradley told Sky News he has submitted one to Sir Graham Brady. And Michael Gove has expressed absolute confidence in the Prime Minister. She was on radio earlier appealing for him to stay within Cabinet. He maintains that the best work he can do is within Cabinet rather from the outside. So we'll be hearing a lot more during the course of the day, and of course the future of Theresa May and how that goes, and indeed over the weekend and into next week as well. First, I will take a little break.
You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9am to 12 midday.
Very welcome back to the programme. It's Pat Flynn sitting in for Gavin today and next week as well. The Friday panel in studio this morning, Bernadette Kenny, CEO of Blue Box Charity, Doreen Graham, CEO of the Clare Local Development Company, and Gerard Howard from Crimmins Howard Solicitors in Shannon, all in studio this morning. Bernadette, we were chatting during the break and you were quite vocal on this particular one, and a very serious issue as well. And I was asking the question, you know, whatever about a pair of lacy underwear being produced in court as evidence or as part of a defence. Did you ever think you'd see the day that a TD would stand up in the Dáil in Ireland with a pair of, with a thong to show?
I think what she did was important, and whether you're for it or against it, at least we're having a conversation about it. And often there's antics in the Dáil, let's face it. Yes. There's been many antics in the Dáil, and I don't see this as antics. I think she was passionate about what she was doing. She wanted to bring attention to it. Apparently the cameras didn't show it, but it really got people hot under the collar, because this needs to be discussed. You know, the how women get treated, how they get treated at trial, how they don't report, how there's underreporting about rape and sexual abuse and the misconduct that goes on around that, how there's a certain level of acceptance of misogynistic behaviour, or and when women are blamed because of what they wear or how they look, you know, and I think that was her point. And it does get raised at court, and it has always been raised at court. If you had a short dress on or a low top, were you asking for it? Now, people might be clever in not using that language direct, but there's implications.
The implication was there.
And that, and those implications, like we talked about earlier in Brexit, it's the implication that people allow then the imagination to fill in the gaps. Oh, well, you know, they must have deserved that because that's what they were doing. But I really think it needs a serious discussion about rape victims in this country, and that we need to be seen and take action to support them even more. And because of the underreporting, there should be overreporting. So, you know, in terms of, you know, the whole thing, I know it's going to be talked about, you know, about whether she should or shouldn't have done this, but fair play to her to raise this issue, because I'd hate to see the issue get marginalised, and that's what people do when they're embarrassed. And as a psychotherapist, I know where that goes psychologically. You know, we don't want to talk about the issue because it's difficult, it's uncomfortable. All of us know someone that might have gone through that. And also, just to add that young men and boys are also raped. That the issue needs to be talked about, I think, on a much higher level.
Did Ruth Coppinger raise a very important issue, Doreen, do you think? I suppose in a similar way that Peter Casey, during the election campaign, the presidential election campaign, asked some questions which many people would argue others should have asked in the past, but he had the neck to do so. Has Ruth Coppinger done something like that here?
I wouldn't compare it with what Peter Casey did. I think that's completely...
No, but in terms of asking a question...
I mean, being controversial isn't a virtue in itself for the sake of it. And trying to get attention. I don't think Ruth Coppinger is trying to get attention for herself. I think she was raising a really important issue for a very different reason, which wasn't to promote herself. It was to raise awareness about a really important issue that is embedded into a lot of the court and the process and the wider society about how people see rape victims and what they wear and how they look as being and somehow that they're responsible then for what happens to them after that, and that they're somehow asking for it. So I think she did the right thing. I think it needs to be raised. I think we need to be slightly more confrontational in how we address these things. there are a lot of issues that have been raised, you know, not just in Ireland, but we look at what happened in the States with the appointment of the Supreme Court judge and how that was viewed and treated in the media as well and by broader American society. And I think there is an awakening. And I'm very glad that there is, where people, and particularly women now, are realising that they do need to push back against these types of prejudices, and some level of misogyny that definitely exists. And that we need to call these things and say, this is not acceptable. There is evidence, obviously, in rape trials that is acceptable and that has to be looked at. But this is not and should not be part of any evidence base.
Garrod Howard, as a solicitor, just sitting back and watching this, what are your views on it?
Well, typically a rape trial will revolve around two issues. The first one is identity. Do we have the correct defendant? Now, DNA evidence and developments in science have done away with a lot of that, and it's then comes down to which is the second issue, which is consent. Mm-hmm. And consent is very, very a complex area, although people might say it's quite straightforward. But when you get into the confines of this, when you have two adults, more often than not, who have completely different versions of events about one incident and what they say happened, the whole issue of the consideration of consent then becomes the most important aspect of the case. So in that type of a consideration with the judge and the jury, what they've got to do is to take into account the circumstances around what happened and then try to decide which version of events do they prefer. So this is a very... and consent isn't always going to be along the lines of, and I'm sorry to be so dry about this and non-passion, but just to look at the issue is that if I'm in a relationship with another adult for a long time, I don't... the courts have said I don't need to seek consent on each occasion in which we're going to have sexual relations or sexual intercourse. But by the same token, I can't presume...
Yeah.
That I can just carry on regardless. So that this is why the circumstances around it are so important. I'm not for one second suggesting that this was legitimate to produce a person's pair of underwear in the course of a trial. The difficulty here, as we have touched on, is that it's accepted that there is largely... a big section of sexual assaults and rapes go unreported because the victim feels they won't be believed. Maybe they feel guilty themselves and they start to blame themselves, which obviously is something that I think any right-thinking person would want to avoid. At the same time, I think that the press as well have a role to play in this because they look to sensationalise where they can. And you know, we've seen it in the past where there might be a two-page spread in a Sunday newspaper about the Dáil bar bill and what it was. And then something that's very important, such as money being withdrawn for essential services, is given a small little paragraph in the corner of a page. You know, so where's the newsworthiness? And, you know, so this is something that now is very, very topical and is sensational. I suppose it's been sensationalised. I agree that this is an important issue to be looked at. A very eminent lawyer, a fellow by the name of Professor Tom O'Malley, earlier this year has taken on the appointment to examine the conduct of these trials and to decide how they may be better dealt with or progressed. And I suppose, you know, in camera, you know, that's something that you have in cases like family law cases that they can't be reported on, or at least a lot of detail can't be given. And maybe that's a way to go with it. But by the same token, you do want these trials being reported on so as to encourage people who've experienced this to come forward and make their complaint. It's a very difficult balancing act. But for as long as you'll have this, you'll have the question of consent. So we touched on the Belfast trial that drew, you know, a huge coverage on it. And, you know, as has been said before and accepted, this poor girl was treated appallingly. But it was decided that these individuals were not guilty of particular criminal offences. There's no criminal offence just says, Jesus, you didn't carry on right there.
Yeah.
There are particular defined offences. And this is important. If we're to have a correct rule of law and a proper operating system, which are recognised as having both civil and criminal systems, there is a narrow defined offence. And these guys were not guilty of that offence. yeah, you know, these guys treated her terribly. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. Nobody else could say otherwise.
Yes.
And I'd like to hear it if somebody would like to promote that side of things. But so now we have this, this is very, very unsavoury, you know, a rape trial where this girl had to give evidence, harrowing, I've no doubt about it. And at the end of it all, she's the one that we're all talking about because of her underwear.
But are you happy, and would you be happy that the defence lawyer was doing their job for their client and was doing their best for their client, or did the defence lawyer overstep the mark?
I'd have to accept they were doing their best for their client and that they used their judgment in the case, and they thought that this was something that would play on the jury's mind. They thought this was something that was important in the trial. Yeah, and it's my point,
Bernadette, yes, you did, because, yes, exactly. You know, and I think we've often heard it said, we might have said it ourselves, look at her, she's looking for trouble.
Yes.
You know, but it doesn't mean that she should attract trouble. No. It's not her fault. Maybe she's not going out looking for trouble, but you'd get the perception that the way someone dresses, whoever it might be, you were making that point as well.
Yeah, I think on the topic of the guys in Belfast, I think that got played out in the media, and because of their high profile, I think that's why they got let off. They got fired for it. I think that was absolutely appalling. The whole thing of consent is so subjective. We pretend that the law is a rational and from the left brain. It isn't. It's very limited. When how a barrister presents a case can be swayed by how they use the words, the images that they provoke with those words, and how they provoke, which is what Garrod was saying, how they provoke the jury. In that, you've got a society that thinks women are lesser, that we're still patronised, we're still people, men still think they've got a right to come up and put their arm around us and say, don't make a fuss. And that goes on from all levels, from street level to my level as a CEO in charities to businesses. That is still there, that implication that women are lesser. And then if you bring it up, you're told that you're just making a fuss and you're just one of those feminists and you're a man-hater, which isn't true. But all our young women are listening to that. All our young women are noticing, you know, can they say what has gone on for them, both with sexual abuse or sexual assault or rape? I really think it starts with education. And I think education is our revolution. If we work with children to understand that gender is movable, that there isn't a particular way for a woman or a man to be, and that doesn't decry either sex or transgender, that in that way that we start changing society's views of women. Because we have this plethora of ideas that, oh, we're really feminist now, and you know, we've got a gay Taoiseach and everything's fine in Ireland, but it isn't. On the grassroots, I still work with young women that have been assaulted or raped or sexually abused, and that still gets covered up, or they're petrified to say, and that they won't be believed. That case that in the Dáil that was being highlighted was a 17-year-old girl.
Yes.
Adolescent young women, as well as all women, are mortified that their bodies are talked about publicly, that their behaviour is talked about publicly. I think it was absolutely disgraceful what happened in Belfast, and I think this woman was absolutely right to bring that through, and we need a longer conversation and a deeper conversation on the side of the law about this idea of consent. And just in case people listening misunderstood what Garrod was saying, wives can say that they've been raped. There is a law that says that women, whether married or not, have the right to say no. And there are many cases where a wife has been raped. And I also want to say right now that if people are listening that are getting affected by this and feel traumatised or things are coming up, the Rape Crisis Centre or the Samaritans, you can find their number online or Google it, or maybe Claire FM will put it up afterwards, that you can go on there and talk anonymously and express how you feel, and it will stay you know, within yourselves. But if you are getting triggered by this conversation, please do call the rape crisis or the Samaritans.
And it's no coincidence that the what they're calling the thong protest went to Belfast yesterday and with a huge turnout there as well. It certainly has been a very interesting week in terms of news, and maybe it's quite bizarre in some areas as well. But as I say, a lot of questions still being asked. We'll come back to a lighter topic after the break.
You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9am to 12 midday.
You're very welcome back to the programme. The Friday panel in studio, Bernadette Kenny, Dorian Graham and Gerard Howard. I did say before the break there that it was rather a bizarre week in terms of news. And we heard about, was it last Friday, reports of UFOs in Irish airspace, and we heard the air traffic control communication between certain pilots and all that. So any, and I'm sure UFO believers around the world are just rubbing their hands and loving all of this. Any UFO believers here?
Yes.
You jumped in there very quickly.
Oh, I did, I'll tell you. Because I lived in California for many years, and friends of mine have been to Area 51. I listen to podcasts about aliens, and also just I think that it's very arrogant of us to think we're the only beings in the multiple of universes. And then, you know, on a lighter note, I do look at people like Donald Trump and some other mad folks, and I think they're definitely aliens. You know, and they're the negative aliens. But it is amazing, Pat, you know, the amount of material out there about aliens and other planets and other beings and technology. I mean, there's a whole conspiracy theory that Hitler got hold of some of the materials from Area 51, where there was a landing, I think, in 49, that's how we've advanced our technology. So it infiltrates, or they infiltrate, I think, a lot of our world. So, yeah, I'm a believer.
What do you think, Doreen, when you heard about all that?
I suppose believer might be too strong a word. I'm open to it. I think, I think it's possible. I think it's possible. I don't know if it is the case. I think it's in all the universes, as Bernadette has said, it might be hard to say that no, there is nothing out there, nothing else out there. The universe is so infinite, and So yes, I'm open to the possibility that there is something, or are other beings, or other civilizations, or whatever you want to call them out there. Whether this was one or not, I obviously don't know. It might have been the meteorite. Who knows? Pilots are probably used to seeing things like falling stars anyway, you would imagine. Yes. So, like, I hardly think they'd mistake a falling star for what they saw if they're reporting something like that.
There's a lot of space debris out there as well. A lot of space debris out there.
Yeah, meteorite.
And that would be burning up, coming through the atmosphere, and could they give the impression. Gerard, when you heard about this, or I presume you did hear about this, what did you think straight away? Did you just... I had a good snigger at it, because I write a lot about aviation, and I hear about this all the time, and I think the only reason this came to the fore was because one pilot started a conversation, a very short conversation with air traffic control, but somebody obviously picked up on it, and another pilot jumped in, and then they were having the crack about it. So it kind of, you know, the radio communication became very lengthy, so somebody obviously picked up on it. But my theory is, I was thinking about Trump passing through Irish airspace around the same time, and fighter jets out of Mildenhall or out of one of the Lake and Heath or someplace like that. But what did you think yourself when you heard about this?
I suppose I'd be open-minded. I think no matter if you're a true believer and think that there are aliens out there, like, why haven't they made contact? And are they just talking to Mr. Trump, is it? Because he's the top dog, he's the alpha male. Is that the way it works? But... what I would say is that I've seen some footage on social media, and it's very interesting. And we're not talking about something shooting straight across the sky. You're talking about an object changing shape, moving, more objects changing direction and leaving, and moving in very peculiar ways. And maybe it's the light, maybe it's somebody at home with a fantastic computer and they've dreamed this up, but there's plenty of it there to look at, and it's certainly thought provoking. But I wouldn't shoot it down, but I don't expect
you
to
wouldn't shoot it down. Come on.
No. No pun intended.
We'll wrap it up, because we have another item to get to after break. Thank you all for coming in, really appreciate it. Bernadette Kenny, CEO of Blue Box Charity. You are up for an award, I believe, as well. We were talking about the Ennis, or the Clare Chamber, the Ennis Chambers Awards.
Yeah.
When was your award, Limerick?
Limerick, it's tonight. And I know some of your listeners are also involved in it, your listeners in Shannon. But Blue Box is up for the non-profit award, along with Rape Crisis and Novus, and fair play to them, and some other businesses from Shannon. And it's the same as the Clare Awards. But we're very excited as a small charity that does a lot of big work with children, traumatised children in Limerick. We're really excited at the prospect of maybe winning.
Well, very good. Best of luck to you, Bernadette.
Thank you very much.
Doreen Graham, CEO of the Clare Local Development Committee, and Gerard Howard from Crimmins Heart Solicitors Shannon. Thank you all for coming on. Have a great weekend. Thank you indeed.
You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 midday.